Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, February 12, 2020. We begin today's reading with the article headlined, Michael Henslick Trial, Day 1. I said a prayer to God, then called 911. State opens its case, including testimony from victim's mother. By Mary Schenck Urbana. Tony Cassano sat alone on the steps of her daughter's Mahomet home for several minutes on November 2, 2009, waiting for help just moments after finding her only daughter fatally stabbed. Holly Cassano, 22, was supposed to have been at her mother's home two streets away about 90 minutes earlier at 9 a.m., but didn't show up. When Tony Cassano couldn't reach her by phone, she drove to her daughter's home and found the front door unlatched. Just inside the front door, she saw red splotches all over the floor. I thought it was fake blood from a Halloween party, and she hadn't cleaned it up, Cassano said. I walked through the house and went into her bedroom, still calling to her. I found her lying on the floor on her back, face up. I saw her naked with blood all over her and stab wounds. She had some clothing on, but it had been moved around. I sat down beside her and put my hand on her leg. Asked by State's Attorney Julia Reitz how Holly felt, her mother replied, "Very cold, very stiff." I said a prayer to God, then called 911. I stayed inside just a few more minutes, then forced myself to go outside because I did not want to contaminate anything, Cassano said. Jurors and observers sniffled and wept quietly during the powerful testimony of the grieving mother Tuesday morning near the opening of the murder trial of Michael Henslick, 31, of Mahomet. She was the fourth of 19 witnesses prosecutors may call to build their case that Henslick fatally stabbed his former neighbor and classmate in an exceptionally brutal and heinous manner indicative of wanton cruelty. If the 8 women and 4 men judging Henslick decide that the state proved beyond a reasonable doubt that he killed her and did so in that manner, Henslick faces natural life behind bars. Opening Statements. In opening statements, Reitz said Miss Cassano suffered from upwards of 60 stab wounds, some of them defensive. Trails of blood throughout her home suggested that the killer had also been injured. Reitz said the DNA from that blood was ultimately linked to Henslick. You will hear him in his own words initially deny, then ultimately admit that he killed her, she said. Reitz said Henslick knew Miss Cassano and went to her house to visit late on the night of November 1 or early in the morning of November 2. She was kind to him. They talked. He fell asleep, she said. At some point, he got a knife from the kitchen and, with rage and jealousy, stabbed her repeatedly and sexually assaulted her on the floor. One of Henslick's attorneys, First Assistant Public Defender Lindsay Yankus, said her client was not Miss Cassano's killer. The case is not simple. Pay attention to the leads not followed. Pay attention to the evidence not tested. Pay attention to the assumptions made by law enforcement, Yankus said. Opening Day Witnesses. Prior to the dramatic testimony of Tony Cassano, the state had called Miss Cassano's cousin, Amber Nakashian, close in age and in life to Holly. Nakashian said she knew Henslick from having attended high school with him in Mahomet, as had Miss Cassano. We were friends and had a flirtation, but nothing ever manifested from that, she said. After leaving the area in 2007, she and Henslick occasionally texted each other and spent time together when she returned to Mahomet to visit. Nakashian said her boyfriend was driving her to Mahomet after the murder when she received a text from Henslick. He apologized and said he was sorry and he had heard about what happened to Holly and that there was a lot of commotion on our street, she said. He said she had been beaten or shot. I told him she had been stabbed to death and that I didn't have any extra information. Nakashian said she didn't tell sheriff's investigators about the text in 2009 because it didn't seem relevant. Following Henslick's arrest in 2018, she shared the information with deputies. Also testifying were two friends Ms. Cassano worked with at Meyer, who said she got off between 10:30 and 10:45 p.m. on November 1, 2009. And that was the last either of them saw her. One of those friends, Blake Stoller Sears, said he did not know Henslick through Ms. Cassano, but knew of him after her death from places she worked. I started working at TGI Fridays in 2012. He would be at the same place as I worked, she said. Protecting the crime scene. Veteran Champaign County Sheriff's Deputy Douglas Bialeski was the first law enforcement officer to arrive at Ms. Cassano's DuPage Street home in the Candlewood Estates Mobile Home Park in response to a 911 call from a distraught woman saying her daughter was dead and covered in blood. He found Tony Cassano upset and hysterical outside. She motioned him to the back of the mobile home. Spotting drops of blood just inside the door and knowing the victim was at the other end of the home, Bialeski said that led me to believe there was more of a situation here than I originally expected. The 25-year deputy said he tiptoed through the home, careful not to disturb the many areas where he could see blood prior to arriving at Ms. Cassano's bedroom. He did not go in. I knew it was a crime scene. I knew I couldn't be any help to the victim, he said. Jurors and observers had a clear view of the graphic pictures of Ms. Cassano's body splayed out on her floor next to her bed. There was blood on her, the floor, and the bed. Just inches from her right foot was a plastic tricycle used by her then 18-month-old daughter, who had a smaller bed in the same room. She was not in the home that night. Bialeski said he called his supervisor and paramedics, letting in only two of the many first responders who arrived, so they could confirm she was deceased. He then protected the scene as he waited for detectives and a crime scene investigator who would launch what would end up being 9 years of work to find Ms. Cassano's alleged killer. 2 days of evidence collection. Illinois State Police crime scene investigator Sergeant Mike Kiriwak, retired since 2011, described the layout of the home and almost 50 items of evidence he collected, about half of which he estimated were blood samples. Under questioning by Assistant State's Attorney Troy Lozar, Kiriwak said he started about noon the day Ms. Cassano was found and didn't finish until late the next night, employing the help of a blood splatter analyst from the state police. Besides blood on her bed and near her body, Kiriwak found blood in the bathroom off her bedroom, in the hallway leading to her room, on the kitchen floor, in the kitchen sink, near the front door, on a front storm door, on a vanity and floor of the bathroom at the other end of the house, and on the door and wall of the second bedroom. There were utility scissors in the sink in that second bathroom and the blood-spattered packaging for fishnet stockings. Kerouac collected the packaging but said he never found the stockings. In opening statements, Reed said Henslick told investigators that he wandered through the house looking for something to use to wrap up his cut arm, then left the house, throwing the knife he used to stab Ms. Cassano into a field. This defendant knew things only the person who committed this offense would know, Reed said. Kerouac said he found four knives and blood in the kitchen sink. He could tell at the crime scene that Ms. Cassano's body had numerous defects, which Lozar eventually got Kerouac to clarify were stab wounds. He could also see that her thong underwear was pulled down around one thigh and ripped, and that her camisole was pushed up around her neck, exposing most of her body. When the camisole was removed at autopsy, Kerouac said there were holes in the front and back, but somewhere in the area of 12 to 13 inches in the back. She had also been sexually assaulted. Kerouac collected a blanket from the bloodied bed that had several slit puncture marks, and Ms. Cassano's purse, which was open with cash still in it, on the smaller bed in her bedroom. He also took a light switch plate from the bathroom nearest her body that had bloodstains. Evidence chain. Other testimony later in the day, Tuesday, came from paramedic Andrew Burns, who confirmed that Ms. Cassano was deceased. From former sheriff's investigator Travis Burr, who took the evidence that Kerouac collected back to the sheriff's office, noting it took three cars to get it all there, and Champaign County Coroner Dwayne Northrup, who said he moved Ms. Cassano's body to the morgue in McLean County for autopsy. The trial continues today, with the forensic pathologist who did Ms. Cassano's testimony, and a parade of sheriff's deputies involved in the years-long investigation and arrest of Henslick. Election 2020. Sanders edges Buttigieg in New Hampshire. Klobuchar surges to third place. Biden, Warren in single digits. Yang drops out. Durbin. Time to change election processes. If it were up to Senator Dick Durbin, the way we choose a president would look quite a bit different than it does now. For one, the Carbondale Democrat said Tuesday on the WDWS morning show, there would be no more caucuses. I cannot imagine somebody working all day, picking up their child at daycare or at school, and then heading to a caucus meeting that's going to last 3 hours in a gym, where people are moving back and forth from one presidential candidate to another, he said. To me, that is not an accurate way of measuring political support for anything. Durbin would also junk the Electoral College, which he said favored long before November 8, 2016. The popular vote, he said, is the standard we use for virtually every other election in America, and this Electoral College approach, to me, is something they dreamed up back in the Constitutional Convention that just is as hard to explain as caucuses. That article by Jeff D'Alessio. What's cool in school? A very fine gesture. Innovative students at Central Centennial using sign language in Hunchback. By Anthony Zillis, Champaign. Jaime Tiger wanted badly to connect with his stepbrother Dakota and sister-in-law shortly after their parents married 3 years ago, but it wasn't so easy. Dakota, who lives across the country in Rochester, New York, is deaf, and while the Centennial graduate could read lips, making his new stepbrother placate him didn't sit well with Jaime. Normally, when hearing people interact with deaf people, usually deaf people have to accommodate for hearing people, Jaime said, which is why deaf people learn how to talk or learn how to read lips or write everything down. So when Dakota and his wife made the trip to Champaign and they'd poke their head in Jaime's room, they'd catch him practicing American Sign Language. For 3 years, he's learned independently, and it's just so happened that this spring, Champaign Central Theater Director LaDonna Wilson had an idea that fit squarely into Tiger's life. Wilson had worked on a play, Children of a Lesser God, over a decade ago, when she brought in American Sign Language interpreter Bunny Berg to work with an actor who played a deaf character. This year, she decided to team up with Berg again, and this time she wanted to take an even deeper approach to integrating sign language. When putting together The Hunchback of Notre Dame for a joint production between Champaign Central and Centennial High Schools, which opens Thursday at Centennial, the idea to incorporate sign language dawned on her. One thing that struck me is how it discusses his hearing loss and how that happened because of the bells, Wilson said. When I heard this show was going to be available, that was one of the first things I thought of, incorporating sign language into this show. In the play, Quasimodo signs with the characters he feels connected to, including the gargoyles who came to life, and Esmeralda, who becomes Quasimodo's friend. With other characters, he doesn't sign, which Wilson said shows the distance between those characters. Teaching a new language to a group of high school students was a massive task. Berg began by teaching the basics, then going through each actor's script line by line. This is very innovative, said Berg, who worked with Dakota Wilson when he was in high school. They've done this kind of thing on Broadway, where they had the hunchback sign, but not in high school. Luckily, one dedicated sophomore actor had been studying sign language for 3 years. Tiger, who hopes to pursue theater in college, was an obvious choice for the main character Quasimodo in a play that alternates between two casts with each performance. Tiger has been able to help other students along as they learn a new language or at least to translate their lines. One of those actors is Ricky Wilberg, the other Quasimodo. Tiger said he's been proud of the effort the Central Junior has put in learning to sign for the show. This experience has also helped Tiger accelerate his learning of sign language, and he's begun to write what he calls a senior thesis, which is not something required for any class, on a term he coined as theatrical sign language. I've actually realized the way that the people in theater use ASL, he said. It's a lot more expressive than conversational because in theater you have to be dramatic. In music you have to change the rhythm, which is what a lot of the people have trouble with. It's very lyrical. I have to think of it as choreography and less as signing. The acceleration has taken on greater importance recently. Dakota and his wife had a child, Thalissa, who is deaf. Now that I have a niece, it's everything, Tiger said. I want to be able to talk to her. His desire to learn sign language started off as simply a way to connect with his new family members. Now he's connected it to his passion, musical theater, and he hopes that someday this type of production will be completely normal. Deaf people go to all the same things hearing people go to, but it's different than having a show interpreted when you're actually integrating sign language into a show, Tiger said. We're doing it so well, And I think if other high schools start doing it, it'll be a lot more normalized. My family loves it, especially my brother. He's really proud. Top of the morning. Something to get you going today, courtesy Jim Rosso. Isaac and Sarah Shields grew up in Pontiac and live in Bloomington. Yet Fisher has their heart. People care, they truly care, said Isaac, 30, in his third year teaching science at Fisher High School. That's the biggest thing about Fisher. The community and school have rallied around the couple whose infant son, Cam, passed away on February 23, 2019, due to a congenital heart defect. Last week, Isaac used social media to see if students and staff would wear red to school as part of Congenital Heart Defect Awareness Week. On Friday, the tiny Champaign County school looked like a Cardinals game in St. Louis. Overwhelming, Isaac said. Very moving. In their son's memory, the Shields have started a CAMS card fundraising campaign aimed at helping parents with babies in the neonatal intensive care unit at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana and OSF Children's Hospital of Illinois in Peoria, where Cam spent his life. Thanks to many generous types, like Fisher's National Honor Society, the effort has already generated $5,500. If you'd like to pitch in, visit camscards.blogspot.com. It's important to us that we did something to honor Cam, that we hear his name and others speak his name, Isaac said. It's still difficult for my wife and me. What everyone has done, just being there for us, has meant a lot. Crime update. Champaign man gets 6 years for attempt at sex with teen boy, Champaign. A Champaign man was sentenced Tuesday to 6 years in federal prison for trying to have sex with someone he thought was a teen boy. Prosecutors said Thomas L. Bishop, 60, began chatting in August 2019 on a dating app with someone he believed was a 15-year-old boy, but who turned out to be an undercover cop. They began sending sexually explicit texts, including one where Bishop asked the purported boy to send a sexually explicit photo of himself, prosecutors said. On August 23, he went to a predetermined location in Champaign to take the teen to his house for sex, but was instead arrested, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office. 2 months later, Bishop pleaded guilty to attempted enticement of a minor. That article by Ben Zichterman. Convicted sex offender. 27 months for not updating registration, Mattoon. A Louisiana carnival worker living in Mattoon was sentenced to 27 months in prison Tuesday for not updating his sex offender registration. Dallas Eugene Clement, 58, has several Louisiana convictions for sex crimes, prosecutors said, but hadn't updated his registration after leaving the state in 2015 to work for and travel with a carnival company. He traveled through Texas, North Dakota, and Tennessee and lived in Mattoon with a fellow carnival worker in the off-season, prosecutors said. Clement was arrested March 2019 and pleaded guilty in August. That article by Ben Zichterman. Urbana house. Man accused of setting fire to garage. Urbana. A homeless man who allegedly set fire to a relative's garage in Urbana last week is in jail in lieu of $50,000 bond. Judge Adam Dill ordered Michael S. Patton, 50, to wear a GPS device and to get a risk assessment evaluation when he is released from jail. Patton was charged Tuesday with residential arson and harassment in connection with events that allegedly happened last week. Urbana Police Sergeant Tim McNaught said on Thursday, Patton allegedly set fire to the attached garage of an older woman's home in the 1100 block of Lenore Drive. The fire caused more than $5,000 damage, fire investigators estimated. 2 days before the fire, Patton had allegedly issued a death threat to the woman via phone, McNaught said. McNaught said Patton appeared to have broken into her home through a basement window and removed fuses from the fuse box so that the house was without power. Police were able to match footwear impressions near a tent and a shed where he stays with impressions found at the fire scene and Patton's shoes when he was arrested Monday morning, McNaught said. Residential arson is a Class 1 felony, carrying a mandatory prison term of between 4 and 15 years upon conviction. Arson is a Class 2 felony, and harassment a Class 4 felony. Dill appointed the public defender's office to represent Patton and told him to be back in court March 17. That article by Mary Schenck. An ode to Abe. Happy 211th birthday, President Lincoln. Lincoln Day Dinner. Monticello Man has an impressive collection. By Steve Hoffman, Monticello. At the tender age of 3, Christopher Cody Bantz received his first book about Abraham Lincoln. 34 years later, that volume is still among the 4,000-plus pieces of Lincoln memorabilia the Monticello Man now owns. He spent more than 12 hours over the weekend moving a good portion of his collection to the Monticello Community Building, where it will be displayed during tonight's Lincoln Day dinner. They just thought it was going to be a little phase I'd grow out of in 6 months or a year. Now it's taken over most of my house, Bantz said. He was on hand when the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum opened in Springfield in 2005, and 10 years later was at Ford's Theater on the 150th anniversary of the 16th president's death by assassination. I stayed up 40 hours straight for that event, he said, of the commemoration held in Washington, D.C. What is it about the rail splitter that appeals so much to Bantz? He taught himself to read. He had less than a year of formal education. Everyone was down on him when he was elected president, and yet he kept the Union together during the Civil War. So it's how he had everything stacked against him, but yet he fought through it and was, I think, the best president we've ever had. The 130 people who registered for the Lincoln Day Dinner, which is a fundraiser for the Piatt County Museum, will get a chance to peruse The Passion of Cody Bantz, whose nickname is appropriately Abe. Tickets are no longer on sale for the dinner, but Cody Bantz said the public can attend his presentation on Lincoln that will be given after the dinner, starting at 8 p.m. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, February 12, 2020. Please stay tuned.